the feeling of satisfaction, having sort of turned up about 9, and by the time you turn the lights off and washing things down, it's sort of 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and you sort of got enough energy to sit and drink a beer and then fall asleep, and you get up and just do it again. So I think it's once it gets you, it doesn't leave you.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are getting out of Australia and heading to Germany. We are diving into Berlin to chat to an Aussie chef, Lee Thompson, who has St. Bart, a bit of a gastropub in a very cool part of Berlin. Welcome to Dirty Linen, Lee.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we've got to also thank your mum, Linda, because she's a fan of the podcast and she dobbed you in.
She did.
She said, Lee, it'd be great on the show, and I'm always up for a recommendation, especially from a proud mum. So why do you reckon she thought you'd be good on the show?
I'm not sure, to be completely honest with you. Ironically, I think she's probably the better cook. She should probably be on the podcast rather than me.
Yeah, maybe we'll get your mum on next. So, Lee, tell us a little bit about where you are. Tell us about St. Bart.
St. Bart Pub. We are in the middle of sunny Kreuzberg, which is about as far east as the old West Berlin goes. A pretty busy spot in regards to the city, and we've got lots of restaurants around us that have all opened up over the last sort of five, six years or so, as part of the sort of we call it the Berlin Gold Rush, that finally we're getting some good quality food and produce into the city. And it wasn't always the case over the last, I've been here sort of 12 years or so, and definitely the first 3 or 4 years, things like we're doing at the pub now just weren't possible in the city. So it's been lots of changes, and I'm very happy to be part of that.
And what's actually the situation in Berlin at the moment with COVID? Like, is everything open? Do things feel normal? What's going on there?
I mean, we are open. We've been through, obviously, it's summer here, so we're kind of on opposite ends of the table a little bit in comparison to Australia. Usually that when you guys are up and open, we're locked down. But, yeah, we've had 2 or 3 hard lockdowns thus far, and you know, it changes week to week. I think just the same as Australia. It depends on what information we get. People get frustrated. People love a protest, but you know, we're all just doing. I'm just there to peel potatoes. Leave the politics to someone else, I think.
And are you welcoming people from other countries at the moment?
I think technically you're allowed in with a vaccination at the moment, but you know, it's mainland Europe, you know, so the borders are always pretty porous. It's still possible to sort of move around. I myself am going to the Netherlands next week on a holiday, so yeah, things are still ticking on like normal.
Yeah, fantastic. So give us a bit of your background. Like you said, you've been in Berlin for 12 years. What took you there and what's kept you there?
Ooh, big questions. I mean, if I'm really honest about it, back in the day, it was probably a girl, and it still is a girl that keeps me here. But no, a couple of friends had finished uni. I think what was it, 2005, something like that, and worked briefly as a social worker in Sydney. And then it was pretty much just time to go, kind of go and do a bit of traveling. I had people with me that sort of wanted to go to move on to London and Paris, and we ended up just getting stuck here in sunny Berlin. And I think, literally it was the same group as for about 10 years. And now everyone sort of kept moving, or sort of family stuff has changed. And we're still here sitting in the pub, so to say.
And so was it in Germany that you started cooking?
Yes. Yeah, most definitely. Like, obviously, without the we sort of moved here without. We spent sort of a few months, 3 months in India first, and then moved over to mainland Europe. And obviously, without the language, my degree in psychology was not super useful. So, like everyone that I think that falls in love with cooking, I started at the bottom. Just started as a dishwasher in a cocktail bar. And kept going. I was very lucky in that a few years I did that for a year or two, and then one of the head chefs at the restaurant or at the cocktail bar kitchen, was a guy named Ben from New Zealand. He sort of said to me that if I was willing to turn up early and stay late and earn no money, he'd show me a trick or two, and that's how it started. And the rest is history, as they say.
Wow. It's quite a journey to go from, you know, learning a trick or two late at night to operating a pub. How did that all happen?
Well, I was, again, very lucky. I managed to get some good experience. Worked at a couple of kitchens there in Sydney. My partner and I, Nadine, spent 2011 back in Australia to meet my side of the family, and we ended up getting married there under the bridge at the end of the year. And so I had a little bit of experience working nights in Sydney kitchens, and then also got very lucky as soon as we got back here at the start of 2012, managed to jag a job at quite a well-established pasta place. And there I was very much able to move through the lines. They eventually sort of bumped me up to head chef after a couple of years. So I had a very lucky sort of tour of education, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And I mean, what is it about cooking that made you want to, you know, keep progressing in the industry?
I think there's an element of Stockholm syndrome for all of us there. I think that... there's obviously, you know, the Friday night lights and buzz and the feeling of satisfaction having sort of turned up about nine, and by the time you turn the lights off and washing things down, it's sort of 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and you sort of got enough energy to sit and drink a beer and then fall asleep, and you get up and just do it again. So I think it's once it gets you, it doesn't leave you. I don't think working in kitchens. Like being a smoker or an alcoholic. There's no such thing as an ex.
It's funny. I was just walking my dog before, and I did meet an ex chef in a park, and I think he would agree with you. Like, he had, you know, had back issues and he just couldn't work in a kitchen anymore. But I think, you know, he sort of had to leave the kitchen, but I don't think it had let him go. I feel like every day he wishes that he could get back in there again. It's really interesting. But I mean, what about through these lockdowns? Has it been, you know, have you questioned your choices at all, or have you always wanted to get back in there?
Well, it didn't really stop, to be honest. Like, I think, I don't know whether your listeners will agree, but you know, when you open as a cook, when you open a restaurant, it's virtually, I've heard lots of people both at home and over here talk in the sense of it's almost like military service. You know that you sign on for your 3 or 4 years and you're going to do nothing else. You're literally going to live it and breathe it, and every day as your eyes open up, that's all you're focused on. And then hopefully you get over the hill after a little while and things become easier and you can train staff and all that kind of stuff. But you sign on for sort of 3 years of come what may. And then for us, for that, we opened the pub in August 2017. So it was almost exactly 3 years by the time the pandemic hit. So it was almost like an extra kick in the teeth for us, because we were all very, very exhausted, not much left in the tank. And all of a sudden the government sort of took our public away, so we had to do some very quick thinking. We immediately, I think, changed concepts, because we weren't allowed to have people in the pub anymore. You know, obviously taking the alcohol restrictions, even take away alcohol. The state was very much trying to promote a sense of unnormalcy, you know, with the optics of restaurants being open. So they were really quite hard on us, and so we ended up just falling back on what we know we could do, and we moved into a pie shop. We did just pie, steak and ale, and chicken and tarragon pies for the first winter, and completely sort of changed concepts. And just strangely, that's has proven to be a decent business model even throughout the pandemic. So now that we're coming out of it a little bit, or at least it feels that way, we've started building a production kitchen in one of the neighboring suburbs here called Neukölln. Where we'll hopefully be able to keep making those good old 4 and 20 style Australian pies for the German public in the future.
And you'll be wholesaling them, will you?
I mean, everything's possible. Like it's even a Mac, like we try and do as much as we can ourselves at St. Bart. We realize that it makes a big difference in quality appreciation from the guests. So we do our own ketchups and brown sauces and pastries and all that kind of stuff. So the hope is to keep being able to do that in the production kitchen while the St. Bart kitchen's open. So a bit of silver lining for the pandemic.
Have there been a lot of businesses, you know, restaurants that have developed a new income stream for the pandemic that you think will continue with it post-COVID?
Yes. Yeah, most definitely. Well, we had to. You know, we were literally forced into it. There was no other way for a lot of us to survive. And there are even there are some people that have established entire concept ideas throughout this lockdown. Like Berlin is famously empty of really good Indian food. It all tends to be a little bit the same, a little bit sort of all mished together, like lots of genres. So you know how complicated food from South Asia can be, and it's all just always the same thing, butter chicken. And friends of mine, shout out to Sula and Sachin from Tiffin, have literally started doing a proper Indian food completely based on the lockdown. So all delivery service, all nicely stacked in the traditional Tiffin. Yeah, so there's been lots of people diversifying throughout the pandemic.
That's brilliant. You mentioned that there was a bit of disapproval of selling alcohol during lockdown. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Halfway through the lockdown, they stopped us. We were selling, it was quite popular here over Christmas time, a thing called Glühwein, which is, you know, a warm, a mulled wine. And they stopped us selling that just because literally nothing to do with infections, I don't think. It literally because people were standing in groups or outside and conveying a sense of normalcy. And that's exactly the opposite of what I think the government wanted to convey. So they took it away from us pretty quickly. So yeah, we're very much sort of frowned upon or to some extent blamed for the spread of COVID-19. It was obviously a question of optics. If things are supposed to be taken very, very seriously, it doesn't do much good to have people leaning around drinking mulled wine at 9 o'clock in the evening.
Sure. I guess it's a gathering and, yeah, then it's, yeah. Well, I mean, that is a forum where the virus can spread more easily, I guess. So I suppose, yeah, kind of makes sense to me, but it's definitely makes it more difficult for someone trying to run a business.
Well, yeah, that was pretty much all we had left. They'd taken everything else away, but at least we could sell this mulled wine, you know, they weren't allowed to stay at the premises. We'd have to sell it, take away, and they'd have to keep walking or go to a park or something like that. But that only lasted about a week, and then they stopped doing that as well and stopped us from doing that.
Was there much government support?
Yes. Yeah, I can quite happily say that, you know, we are still the only reason why the pub's still here is government support. It is, however, typically bureaucratic and German. So they announced big after the first year of so this is 2020. November, December, they announced sort of a decent size, big health, a big packet of support packages for us, you know, to help the gastronome in trouble. And they, I think the first one of them landed in the bank accounts at the end of April the next year. So, you know, lots of lip service, we're coming to help, but the actual reality is that they do their own time frames in the bureaucracies here. And if you've got bills to pay and lights to keep on, it's not immediately helpful, but it has definitely helped in general.
Yeah, that's so tough. I mean, I think there'd be lots of business owners in Australia who would say that there's a lot of talk and no trousers with some of these announcements. It definitely can take a while to filter through, even though, of course, yeah, it's welcome when it comes, but it's never enough and it's never fast enough.
No, exactly right. We were, just to give you an idea, like we were, St. Bart was 22 staff in February 2020, and I think it was the Michelin star boys that started telling us that that there was something serious going on, because all of a sudden the tourists weren't there anymore. And now, you know, 2 years later, or a year and a half later, we are 5 employees.
Here in Australia, a lot of the talk in the hospitality industry is about finding staff, like when restaurants are allowed to trade, it's so hard to find staff. Is that the same for you in Berlin?
We've been really, really lucky at the pub in the it was virtually a sort of an OG crew that went into the pandemic with me. Like, we'd all been together for that 3 or 4 years, and a couple of them have gone off to start their own projects now. But a lot of people, that was kind of the coffin nail in the hospitality or gastro career. You know, that was, I know a lot of our staff back in 2020 literally just got straight out of hospitality. Just said, nah, can't do that anymore. It was always something that you had to do for the love rather than the money, I think. And as soon as that became financially less dependable, I think a lot of people just jumped out of the industry in general.
And did you see them go to anywhere particular, or did they just sort of scatter to all kinds of different workplaces?
I mean, I would say scattered in general, but, you know, there's obviously a lot, like particularly here in Berlin at the moment, the entire sort of social media, online startup, app-based employment has really, really just started sort of blooming over the last couple of years. So there's a lot of people that went to work for Gorillas, which is like a food delivery app, or Zalando, which is another big company that will deliver shoes or something like that via Amazon. Yeah, I think they mostly moved over to tech, the entry-level tech.
Yeah, interesting. Like, just sort of pulling back a bit from the immediate series of crises, tell me a little bit about expat life. Like, what's it been like, you know, moving to a new country, starting a new career there, and then becoming a business owner?
I mean, great, I guess, to sum it up. Wouldn't change it for the world. Obviously, lots of learning, challenges, obviously, every day. My partner and I, Nadine, have been together for about 10 years now, and her parents didn't speak a lot of English when I met them. So obviously the language had to be learned pretty quickly. And there's a whole bunch of cultural differences, particularly given the Australian German thing. But no, incredible experience. Would recommend it to everyone.
What do you mean the Australian German thing? What are the cultural differences?
It depends how conspiratorial you want to get. I mean, even the way that the language is structured, you know, it's almost the opposite of us in Australia. There's that famous like when you speak German, it's almost like speaking like old, like Shakespearean English. You know, it's not, you don't know what you're doing, it's you know not what you do. And the people reflect that, you know, the meaning is at the end of the sentence. Germans can be quite blunt and confrontational to start with, but once you sort of show them that you're willing to have a bit of banter, or at least deal with the tempo of the conversation, best friends. So yeah, there is, it's almost like opposites. I remember when we lived in Sydney in 2011, my wife Nadine would almost, she'd had enough of the Australian politeness. She didn't want to be asked how her weekend was every time she went to to get something from the supermarket. She just wanted to be left alone. And it's very much, they'll leave you very much alone if you're not looking for it.
Oh, that's so interesting. And tell me a bit about the food that you do at the pub. Apart from the pies, which I'm actually, yeah, I love a good pie. I wish I could try one. But yeah, tell me about the style of food that you do.
Pub food is the best answer I have in that. Like food that, you know, we started with a reasonably heavy sort of nose-tail focus. Couldn't really get the suppliers that I wanted to do that kind of work. So our rule at the pub is try to, for the cooks, not to be on the plate. You're there to show someone a good time, be part of a positive experience, but you won't find any tweezers or foams in our kitchen there at the pub. It's not supposed to be about an ego process for chefs. It's supposed to be about a good time for the guests. And I think that sort of quite casual attitude is reflected on both sides.
Tell me, Lee, what's a key dish that you do there?
The one big thing that definitely has been the constant over the last 4 years has been our bacon sandwich.
Tell me about that.
In regards to making a bacon sandwich here, it was the first challenge was that the bacon wasn't there. It's my opinion that you want like proper, you know, loin bacon or back bacon with the eye and the strap on for a decent bacon sandwich. And that just literally that's not part of the German culinary history. So I had to, the first step was getting that made for us. And I was very lucky to meet a lovely butcher from New Zealand called Simon, who's the sausage man never sleeps. Is his very successful butchery and sausage making company that he started here about the same time as the pub. And so we got them. We got some lovely happy pigs from Schwabischen Hof, which is not far from Stuttgart. Rolls Royce, very, very well treated animals. And we started making our own back bacon with that. And then obviously the question of bread, there wasn't, you know, we virtually wanted sort of Wonder White. And that wasn't something that any baker would do for us. So that's what we had to do as well. So virtually house Wonder White, house smoked back bacon, and then comes the sauce there on top of there. And it was, again, you got the option of our house ketchup that we do with malt vinegar or a proper brown sauce. But that's the Simbar bacon sandwich. I think that was on our first menu, and it's the one thing we've not really been able to get rid of after 3 or 4 years of service.
It sounds great. It sounds really good. I mean, do you, in normal times, do you find that is it mostly Germans coming, or do you get a lot of tourists? Like, who's your audience?
We've been very, very lucky to get a good mix. You know, it is a danger here in the city a little bit to be, you know, expats tend to sort of want to stick with their lot, you know, and you can very much get a sort of homogenous public or guest pool, but we get lots of mix, and particularly in the spot where we are on Greiferstrasse in Kreuzberg is very much like they call it a Keats city. You know, you don't really leave your neighborhood, so lots of locals, lots of regulars. The tourists come on the weekends, or it used to at least. But no, we've got a very very good mix of Germans and expats. And we make sure it's exactly the same with the staff as well.
So, Lee, I mean, there's still quite a bit of COVID in Germany, and I think you guys are around 55% fully vaccinated. I mean, is that still a big conversation? I mean, obviously everybody in the whole world is over COVID. But, you know, what's the sort of attitude on the street, and especially in the hospitality industry? Is it, you know, where are people at?
It really depends on where you go. Literally, as I just mentioned, it tends to be quite a neighborhood-based city. So there are some, like, literally sort of about a kilometer from where I'm sitting now, you walk in a certain direction and people will literally ignore the mask mandates and things like that. There's no, we're not doing that anymore. But then, you know, in the other direction, you very much sort of still masked and restricted, and you know, it's a very controversial conversation. Unfortunately, still there's still a lot of sort of disinformation that goes around. People can be a little bit skeptical, and you know, I think I had the pleasure to meet the Australian ambassador to Berlin during the pandemic. And sort of said to him that I think the issue is in and around a little bit of trust. You know, we've been told so many things over this way, and it's turned out the next week to be slightly different, or there's more restrictions or less restrictions, or we promise there won't be another lockdown, and there's another lockdown, and you know, I think it's just that fatigue. I think everyone's feeling a little bit at the moment. I think it was very, like, if you had asked me 3 weeks ago, I think everyone would have said, you know, we're done with it now, it's over. But now, obviously, over the last couple of weeks, and we're seeing variants and Australia in lockdowns, I think everyone else is thinking now, okay, then we've got another winter in front of us. But what do you do? Cross your fingers.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do? You can only control, you know, the small things that you can control. You just, peel the potato in front of you, make the pie in front of you.
Silver lining, I am the only Australian in the city, and I do have a pub. So even if I get locked down, I'm locked down in a pub, so it could be worse.
Definitely. And what are you looking forward to for your holiday in the Netherlands?
I'm actually going up to visit a fish supplier of ours. They bring us some invasive species, actually the Pacific oyster, that are eating all the Dutch oysters at this UNESCO World Heritage site. So I'm going up to go out on the boats for a day or two with them, and then I've managed to book a beautiful little Airbnb on the dunes, not far away from the Waddenzee, which is the Dutch north coast, and just a little bit of, like I said, it's been sort of 4 years straight through for me, like with the opening 3 years of the restaurant and then the pandemic, and so nice little sort of week with nothing going on is what I'm looking forward to specifically.
That sounds so good. I know that part of Holland with that those mud flats that just extend for miles when the tide's out, and it's so spectacular. I think when I was there, it was winter. It was really cold, and I just remember getting blown along the beach. But I loved it, all rugged up, and I think even having some glühwein.
That's it. We'll see what the Dutchies can do. No, the same thing. We'll take those nice. They're very dog friendly there, so take the dog to the beach and just do a little bit of recovery is the plan.
Yeah, fantastic. Lee, it's been really great to have you on the show. Thank you for giving me a little trip to Berlin. I'm feeling very Australia locked at the moment, so it is definitely good to get a flavour of somewhere else. Good luck, and look forward to getting over to Berlin, hopefully before too long, and enjoying a meal at St. Bart. Definitely save me a bacon sandwich.
Done. Consider it a deal. Thank you very much, Danny. It's an absolute pleasure.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.